most of us have busy lives and we know that we're not getting the nutrients and the vitamins and the minerals that we need. So I'm always looking for easy ways to ingest them. I found one. It's called Beam Minerals. And what I find is that most of us don't get enough potassium, magnesium, and calcium. Those are the big three. And so what Beam Minerals does is it's put all these minerals in a liquid form that's easy to drink because it tastes like water. It's got all these important minerals and a whole bunch of other ones. And I find that they're really helpful. They save me time. They're easy to take. And I suggest that you give them a try. Go to Beam Minerals, B as in boy, E-A-M, minerals, plural, .com, and use the code Julie Ryan, all together, no space, at checkout, and you'll get 20% off your order. That's Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use Julie Ryan at checkout, and you'll get a 20% discount. Give it a try and let me know what you think.
Julie Ryan, noted psychic and medical intuitive, is ready to answer your personal questions, even those you never knew you could ask. For more than 25 years, as she developed and refined her intuitive skills, Julie used her knowledge as a successful inventor and businesswoman to help others. Now, she wants to help you to grow, heal, and get the answers you've been longing to hear. Do you have a question for someone who's transitioned? Do you have a medical issue? What about your pet's health or behavior? Perhaps you have a loved one who's close to death and you'd like to know what's happening. Are you on the path to fulfill your life's purpose? No matter where you are in the world, take a journey to the other side and ask Julie Ryan.
Okay, let me tell you a little bit about Miss V. She's an intuitive strategist. You probably haven't ever heard that term before. And mentor who works with female business owners to develop their intuition. Is she my kind of girl or what? V, I don't know if you know this, but I have founded 9 companies in 5 industries in the past 30 years. And I'm an inventor of surgical devices and former manufacturer. And my inventions are sold all over the world. So you are speaking my language, my girl.
Well, I will just push my jaw closed and oh my goodness, I am in love.
I know. It's just, you think it's a DNA thing or do you think it's a learned thing to be an entrepreneur?
A learned thing. In my opinion, it's a learned thing. I grew up with, didn't have any role models that were doing this. I just knew I was a fish out of water and quite frankly, my tagline should be, don't tell me what to do.
Me too. You know what's funny about that? I had a boss early in my career. I started my first company at 25, V. But I had a boss early in my career. I was a sales rep selling hospital supplies in Los Angeles. And 355 hospitals in LA County alone. Nope, I take that back. 255 hospitals in LA County alone. And my numbers were great. My sales numbers were great. I was crushing it. And this boss of mine, who was an older man, was giving me so much grief about how my trunk was organized. I wanted to say, who in the hell cares how my trunk is organized? Do you see my sales numbers? And he gave me such a hard time. And I thought, this is such a waste of my time. And I think that among lots of other things prompted me to go into business for myself at 25. Did you run across something like that?
No, not necessarily like that. And in fact, this all just kind of fell upon me. I think I went the traditional route and, you know, I was raised by a man I call Fred Flintstone. He has very archaic views around women. Women don't go to college. They marry men that go to college. I grew up at the intersection of mental illness and alcoholism. And so, you know, I, by all accounts, I should be somewhere in an alley, you know, doing God knows what. But I was always different. I always had ambition and I always questioned everything. I mean, everything. Curiosity is my middle name. And so when I did the traditional, what you're supposed to do, and it didn't work, I blamed myself. I went down a very scary hole and I just started to think, why do I have to fit in? Like, why can't I just make up what I want to be? You know, the old magic wand. Like, why can't I do that? And so that's what I did.
Yeah. Curiosity is my middle name, too. We're probably Siamese twins separated at birth or something.
Somewhere.
But yeah, my husband affectionately refers to me as information suck because I'm just naturally curious. And I think that's what makes life interesting. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. And, you know, here's the thing I learned a long time ago. I never want to be the smartest one in the room. It's not, I don't want to be because I, you know, and that's a big bugaboo for me because I was told you're not smart enough, you know, and, you know, and to assimilate into senior leadership position and to be, you know, in a place where I was professionally, it took a lot of personal development. A lot.
Yeah. Well, you say you help women find their true selves. Are they lost? Number one.
Yeah,
helping
right.
Helping somebody find their true selves. What's that mean?
Here's my flare. You know, I believe that we all have a story and we tell ourselves that story. And I believe that it all comes from this place and that place. There's conditioning and, you know, then there's who we make ourselves up to be. And over the course of years, I'm seasoned and I'm proud to say I am 61 years young and I cannot wait to be 62 next year. Life gets better and better for me. So having said that, somewhere around 40, I personally started going, what's going on here? There's got to be something. I felt like something was off, something was missing. And I want to clarify something. I probably had a midlife crisis, but I now know there's a difference between midlife transition, which is what I specialize in, and midlife crisis. They are very different. Midlife crisis is you're trying to recreate your lost youth, your whatever, you know, it is that you feel you missed out on. And midlife transition is, and I get very emotional, very passionate about this, is really stepping in to who you came here to be. And that's the transition I love taking women through.
Well, how does somebody figure out what they came here to be?
Mm-hmm. So as an intuitive, and intuition is not hocus pocus, and I don't shrink heads and boil chicken bones, and I'm not howling at the moon. I can if you want me to, but it's an inside job. It's really about self-awareness, knowing who you are, and asking the questions, right? Getting really deep with questioning yourself, the world around you. And I'll give you a quick story. Years ago when I was speaking, I was coming off the stage and out the corner of my eye, this woman was like, I thought she was going to tackle me and that was going to be it. She came right up to me, stuck her hand out in my face and said, "Hi, I'm Betty, the ex-mayor of so-and-so. You know, the one that embezzled the money? I took the money, but I paid it back and I went to jail. I did my time." And I went, "Whoa, Betty." And Betty's got a story, just like we all have a story. We don't all introduce ourselves as blatantly as Betty with our story, but we are all leading with a narrative. And so becoming aware of your narrative is how you begin the process of transition, and intuition and your body will help you.
Do you think we all come in with intuition? Are we just all hardwired for it when we come in?
Oh, I believe so. Absolutely.
Women and men?
I believe so. Yeah. I think the human race, you know. And I always tell my clients, it's not like I got it and you didn't. I think we're all, it's equally distributed. But like playing the piano, I'm only going to get better if I practice. So that's what I believe. And you know what started me on this journey? In 1996, like I said, I had made some decisions in my life. I had become somebody I didn't really like, and I went to take my own life. And as I was about to crash into the side of a bridge abutment, my car filled up with this amazing warmth. That's all I can say. And I had to squeeze my shoulders together. And I now, in hindsight, know it was angelic intervention. And I just heard, we've got you. You know, you're not going anywhere. And in that moment, I still get chills to this day when I tell the story.
I have them too, with you even telling this story.
Everything just unfolded because, like I said earlier, I shouldn't be here by all accounts in the physical world, but yet I'm doing this work. So,
what were you doing before you started your company?
Yes, I was. I started out in retail, and then I went into chiropractic. I was very curious about that, so I found a chiropractor who was just this incredible teacher and taught me all about the body and the movement. And then I got curious, and honestly, I went into dentistry. And here's the interesting thing: I was terrified of the dentist. I just had this fear. And back in the day when you could look up the ads in the paper and get a job, I saw a dental assistant, and this dentist was willing to train. And if I was willing to learn, and I took the job because I wanted to conquer my fear. And so I ended up starting out as chairside, and I worked my way up to managing a $1 million practice in the 90s. Partnering it with nonprofits so that we could feed and serve the community. I mean, we were doing things in the 90s that you just didn't do as a dental office. And I don't know that anybody's still doing it. And so after that, I decided that I was going to save the world. So I went and worked nonprofit. That's a little joke. So I was a membership director in a local nonprofit. And one of the things I've always known is creativity, art, if you will, can really be a savior to so many people. And so I went out into the community and I started an art gallery in our local nonprofit. It was a YMCA. And I tied it to a space that we had that we weren't doing anything with. And I brought the community in at a level where donors would just come in to see the art, potential donors would come in to see the art. And it was just this beautiful uniting of people who need and people who have. And so I've always been that person that likes to link things together. So that was that. And honestly, to tell you the truth, I married the CEO of that organization. So one of us had to go. He'd been there 32 years. And it was me that was going to go. And I had been treated very poorly. I don't like to focus on this part of it, but it was a very hostile work environment once they understood that we were seeing each other. And I left. And by the grace of God, I was given, thank you, Obama, 2 years of unemployment to help me get my ship up, just to figure me out. So I collected unemployment. I built this business with a yellow legal pad, a pen, and my kitchen table. That's it. That was it.
Yeah.
And a dream, right?
Well, I think you've hit the nail on the head when you say creativity, because so many women, especially, I think, are afraid to try things because they don't think they have the training. And my feeling is, do you know how to read? Anything you need to know is available, especially in this day and age with all the internet opportunities to get information. And just go on YouTube. YouTube will teach you how to do anything. And who knows where YouTube is going to lead you. So I think it makes tons of sense to what I say to women, especially who are trying to figure out what their next step is. What lights you up? If you were a bazillionaire and you never had to worry about money again, what would you do for fun? And they say, fun? That's not part of the equation. I said, it's all of the equation. If you enjoy doing it, that's the key. And that's where you're being led. If it's interesting, if it's fun, if you want to know more, if you're having that, I mean, everybody has to do stuff that's a slog, let's face it, at times. But if for the most part, it's something that's interesting and fun, that's where you're being led. Would you agree with that?
I would absolutely 1,000,000% agree with that. In fact, my tenets of my membership are self-awareness, creativity, and laughter. If it ain't fun, I ain't doing it. And I've earned that right, you know? So yes, I would, yeah. I would completely agree with that. And I cut my teeth on a Sony Walkman and cassettes by Wayne Dyer, right? That's how I got my entry into the spirit world. We didn't have this accessible to us. And I ferocious reader, you know, Carolyn Mace and Marianne Williamson, and my mentors, and I came up with a really strong spiritual background.
Did you grow up in a spiritual family?
No. My growing up was all about survival. When you're the product of an alcoholic father, you become like reactive very quickly. And so I had to always be one step ahead, which I now understand I'm so thankful for, because I love change. I don't fear any kind of change. I'm okay with it. And I really attribute that to the background that I grew up in and just having to navigate all of that change, you know? So in terms of religion and spirituality, nothing. Santa Claus was Christmas and Easter Bunny was Easter. And so, yeah.
Did the change come from lots of moves or change on a daily basis? Let's check the barometer of the room. What kind of mood is dad in?
Absolutely. How's he going to come home today? Is he going to be set off? Is it going to be, you know, and there was not physical abuse. I want to just be clear. A lot of it was mental abuse, you know, very cruel mentally. But I'm also proud to say that, you know, my father hasn't had a drink for 43 years. And that was a decision he made. And he stays in that space every day, one day at a time, he'll tell me. And we've mended things. And unfortunately, my biological mother passed. We were estranged. So there's still some work. And I still think that's all part of the evolution and the transition. We all have a story, again, coming from a place. And the people in it make us, you know, who we are.
Well, and there are a lot of teachers and scholars who believe, spiritual scholars, I'll say, who believe that we choose our parents, we choose where we're born, when we're born, to whom we're born, so that our lives can be on a trajectory that will allow us to experience and explore things that our spirit wants to explore and experience. I buy into that. I get that that's feasible, and most likely I would go so far as to say it's probable. Do you have a thought on that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I agree with you 100%. You know, if you look at us, just each person individually, and you take away the human emotion around it, right? Because the human judges it. The personality goes, oh, that's sad, that's good, that's bad. The soul is neutral, right? The soul just looks for the energy of the experience. And it's going to, I liken it to this, like, okay, here's my checklist. So I'm going to come down and I'm going to experience not necessarily alcoholism, but I'm going to experience some sort of abandonment, some sort of isolation. And oh, it just happens to come through being the child of an alcoholic that I chose, you know? I absolutely believe that.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. I haven't heard it stated quite so eloquently. I really like that. It's the experience. What I believe and what I've been told a lot of times, and I learned how to be a medical intuitive and psychic medium and teach people how to do it now. I mean, I didn't have dead people chasing me from childhood, or if I did, I didn't know it, let alone what I would have done with that information. But what I hear is in heaven, in the spirit world, everything is just an experience. So they look at something that we would deem horrific and they say, oh, isn't that experience interesting? Wonder what V's going to do with this? How's she going to come out of it? What's she going to create? And we're all here to, it's all about creating and creating in joy and with love. And so our intuition, in my opinion, is an internal GPS system. And we all come in with it and we're hardwired for it. And if something feels good, great. That means it's valid. If something feels bad, you're in fear, check it out.
Absolutely.
You know, what's going on here? What limiting belief is it triggering? Because everything's neutral until we give it a meaning. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh my gosh, we were separated at birth. I mean, like, it's like the choir is singing. I'm like, you have no idea. We add opera singer to her repertoire. You have no idea how refreshing it is to sit here with you and to hear this, because quite frankly, and I'm known to be a little outspoken, quite frankly, I've come up against some really not people in this belief system, I'll just say. And yeah. I like things to be practical. I mean, I guess you could be from Arcturia or Pleiadians. I guess you could be, and that's great. But I go, what are you going to do with that? How's that going to make your human experience better? You know, okay, past lives. Sure, I believe in them. I've done past life work before. Are you going to go down a rabbit hole, or are you going to learn from it? Are you going to take it and move you forward, or are you going to use it as an excuse? Like, who are you in this instance? And one of the exercises I do with my clients is there are four words that spirit said, hey, V, pay attention. And these four words, every woman is triggered by one of them. And they are love, security, status, or recognition. Now, I do this work. It's the one word method, but it's also my Power of Words e-journal. And every woman has a word that lands in her. And I'm not talking like a Hallmark movie, like, whoa, love. I'm talking a 747 hits you right here. And it, right? That's the place we begin our journey into reinvention, into transition. One word. And I take you on that journey. It's quite incredible, I must say. I didn't create it. It was downloaded to me.
Yeah, as is everything.
Yeah.
I'm a girl with a communications degree who has invented surgical devices sold throughout the world. I'm not a medical provider. I'm not an engineer. How's that work? Absolutely. Spirit sent it. I can hire really good engineers, and I did. But yeah. What is it about midlife women that inspired you to start your company? Why that niche?
Yeah.
Because you were a midlife woman at the time, or is there more to the story?
No, I was. And the lack of resources that I felt were attainable or available to me, because we live in a very noisy world, right? Like, everybody's chatting at us. And then, you know, back in the day, our brains are wired for survival. You know, the saber-toothed tiger, we had to look out. We're not watching for saber-toothed tigers anymore. We got text messages. We got emails. And women are like, yes, while there's so many resources, they're drowning in overwhelm. And the key to all of this is this question: who are you naturally? First thing in the morning when you wake up, who are you? What's in your heart? What matters to you? What is it that lights you up, just like you had said earlier? Because at the end of the day, if we're not living in a space that naturally fills us up, we're not being who we came here to be, right? We're just kind of, you know, the old fake it till you make it. I don't like that. I want to know who you are. I always got detention in school. I always got suspended for one reason. I talk too much. Guess what I get paid to do? So here I am, you know, being naturally who you are. And that was important to me, to give voice to that, because so many women, with all of the noise, you know, whose definition will I wear today? It's almost like you go in and you pick out an outfit, like, whose definition am I going to wear today? Who should I be today? Oh, I'm going to change it based on, I've got this going on. Oh, and this family member's over here. And it's like, no. Don't do that. Be naturally who you are.
Well, back to the feeling overwhelmed thing, I believe, and it's kind of a catch-22, but I believe that the generation of women before us, I'm a few years older than you, I graduated from college in 81, the Gloria Steinems, the Bella Abzugs, those guys, the whole burn your bra, women's lib thing, paved the way for you and me to join the workforce in a man's world. I was one of the female quota recruits for a great big huge multi-billion dollar hospital supply company right out of college. I was the only woman in my region. I was one of two women in like a multi-region, whatever they called it at the time. And we didn't wear pants. We wore skirt suits. I wore a suit with a skirt and heels and walked around those hospitals all over, you know, creation. And I remember I hurt my foot, slipped it, tore some ligaments. And so I couldn't wear heels. So I was wearing flat shoes. Well, I wasn't going to wear flat shoes with a skirt. I mean, that was not cool. So I wore pants. And I remember apologizing to my clients because I had pants on. And this is in the early 80s. It's not that long ago. And I think we've come a really long way from that, number one. But number two, with the whole women's lib movement, which helped us on a corporate level and a job level, we still had all the responsibilities of family and kids and meals and laundry and houses and all that kind of stuff. That didn't seem to get negated just because we were working a full-time job all day long. And yeah, I think we've done a better job of training our husbands and our men to help. But at the end of the day, most of those responsibilities still fall on the woman of the house. And it's interesting too, V, that when I was growing up, it was usually the men that died first. Well, in my case, and with pretty much all of my friends, the women died first. Most of my friends lost their moms before they lost their dad. You're a case in point as well. And I've often wondered, is that part of the whole, you know, let's just double the stress load for the women of the world with working a full-time job and then doing all this other stuff. And I talk to so many women who are retired now and they say, I don't know how I did it with kids and a job and running a house and doing all of that. So I'd love to hear your thoughts along those lines. I think that there was a shift when women really entered the workforce, as in my case, as part of the quota system to bring more women into the workforce.
Most of us have busy lives and we know that we're not getting the nutrients and the vitamins and the minerals that we need. So I'm always looking for easy ways to ingest them. I found one. It's called Beam Minerals. And what I find is that most of us don't get enough potassium, magnesium, and calcium. Those are the big three. And so what Beam Minerals does is it's put all these minerals in a liquid form that's easy to drink because it tastes like water. It's got all these important minerals and a whole bunch of other ones. And I find that they're really helpful. They save me time. They're easy to take. And I suggest that you give them a try. Go to Beam Minerals. B as in boy, E-A-M, minerals, plural, .com, and use the code Julie Ryan, all together, no space, at checkout, and you'll get 20% off your order. That's Beam Minerals, B-E-A-M, minerals.com, and use Julie Ryan at checkout, and you'll get a 20% discount. Give it a try and let me know what you think.
You know, again, I said I was raised by, I call him Fred Flintstone. He had a very, probably for the time, he's 82 now, so probably for his time, he had the mindset of most, right? Women, he wanted women to stay home and they belong in the kitchen and have the kit, you know, the whole nine yards. And I believe that there was a big shift. In the 80s, I was married very young, so I was getting married in 83. I was having babies 84, 85, 86. And so I was in that space where I lived in this little bubble. And I began to, you know, as I would get out and I would see, oh, there are women doing things, you know, and that was an inspiration to me that, okay, I didn't have to be in this space if I didn't want to be. Because you see, prior to that, I always thought I needed to be in that space. I was raised with my grandmother, who was born in 1919, right? And she never worked a day in her life, never drove a car, right? And so I've got all of this conditioning. And I think that if we enter into a space and we choose to walk outside of that conditioning, we're called, or, you know, in our family, we're called troublemakers or stirring the pot or the black sheep, because nobody can understand me. Nobody understood that I wanted more, that I wanted to take who I was and not even notoriety or famous wise. I wanted the world to see me. And I wanted to know that what I was bringing mattered. And I think every woman wants that. So when you put, I have a question for you. When you put your skirt on, your skirt suit, was that your definition of who you were in that moment? How did that skirt suit affect who you were as a creative, powerful woman? Did it matter or you didn't even think about it?
It's just what we wore. You didn't see any women in business that were in pants.
So there was no other reference. Yeah. That's what
happened. No, women wore skirts. And, you know, I think about that and I think, God, I not only lived through it, I participated in it.
Yeah.
And that's just nuts. The other thing is, I think we're so fortunate now for women, and I am an example of this, who have the ability to create the life that they want. I have one son, Jonathan, who's the center of the universe. Everybody that listens to my show knows his nickname's His Majesty. And he's 31. And he, when he was born, before he was born, I told my husband, I told his dad, I said, I am staying home with him. I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom because I can always do another deal, but I can't get these years back with him. And if we have to live in a one-bedroom apartment, that's what we're going to do. Now, I had companies running. I worked about 10 hours a month because I had really good people that were running things for me and I just kind of oversaw things. But I was a stay-at-home mom for 9 years. I was the room mom. I went on every field trip. I took him to school. I picked him up every day. You know, that captive audience time in the car. And I'm so grateful that I had the opportunity to do that because I had made a lot of money before he was born. And I had the opportunity to stay home with him and have passive income coming in. What I learned was being a stay-at-home mom is way more work than working a full-time job outside of the home. I mean, it's like, it doesn't even compare. And I only had one. My mom had 4 kids in 5 years. I don't know how she didn't lose her mind, really. And then you hear about moms that have way more kids than that. So I think the opportunity that we have to make those decisions now as women is what a blessing that we can go out. And most moms are waiting before they have kids. You know, the having kids right when you're in your 20s, early 20s or whatever. Most women are, the age of birthing babies has moved out quite a bit. So we have the opportunity to create that scenario for ourselves. And I'm so grateful that I could do that with Jonathan. And we have a very close relationship today. And I think a lot of it is because I was with him all the time.
Yeah. Oh, so, I agree.
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
Why is it vital, so vital, for female business owners to develop their intuition And that helps them operate their business from a self-trust standpoint. Why is that important? Why do you teach how important that is?
Well, you know, trusting yourself is the thread that should go through all of life, right? We should be able to look at ourselves and discern for ourselves what feels right to us. And as a business owner, I can speak to this now with the pivot that I'm making in my business. And I'm going to digress for a moment, but I promise you it circles back. I got found by a popular YouTube channel. And as a result, I didn't have to, I mean, listen, overnight success for me was 11 and a half years in the making. Trust me when I say.
It is for most people.
I've got it. But once I got found and I got this sense of stage of notoriety, I didn't have to do anything. Like, people found me. And the door opened, and I'm very grateful for that. But now, going backwards and pivoting and saying, okay, I want to serve a very specific woman, and not everybody that comes at me with their drama and their chaos is going to be allowed into my world. And so I am starting from scratch, basically, even though I'm a seasoned business owner. And what I'm finding is it's, again, noisy out there. You've got, you know, open up your email. Everybody wants to sell you something. Scroll TikTok for a minute. Everybody has your solution. And I'll tell you what, there was a woman years ago, and obviously I won't say names out of respect, but she got me. And what I mean by that was I was vulnerable because I was looking for what she had. And she got me to the tune of $347 a month locked in for a year contract. Now, that's not a lot, but when you're making not that much money and you're locked into this contract, and none of it was what I thought it was. What she was brilliant at was marketing. The deliverables, I'm sorry to say, weren't there. And what she was good at was the marketing. And so if you know, had I known back then that there was this little barometer inside of me that I could have used, and if I had known how to ask the right questions, I might have saved a substantial amount of money. And I might have put it somewhere that perhaps, who knows, would have catapulted me in a different time frame. But, you know, again, I believe in divine timing. So there's that. So decision making. You know, I've had women come to me that are in the medical industry. I've got three doctors I'm working with, physicians right now, female. They're leaving traditional medicine because they want to go into the holistic field. So, you know, how do we navigate this? Because yes, they're intuitive. They know it, but they've also got this Western side of, you know, this is how we do it. And so how do I trust that? I've got psychologists that are looking to kind of step out of the red tape and the bureaucracy because they see there's the way to help patients in a way that if their hands weren't bound, it could be different. But again, how do I trust this? And so decision-making, partnership, networking. You know, we've all done it, right? You go into a room and, you know, I always say, I can sniff out the energy of a room in a minute. Like, I'm sure you can too. You know, we read the room. Well, what does that mean, really, read the room? It's an energetic reaction that our body will always have to something. Think about this, and I want the listeners to think of this. Have you ever been in the grocery store? And you're pushing your cart down the aisle and you look up and all the way at the other end of that, you see somebody and you're like, oh, I don't want to see them. I don't know who they are. I can't place them, but I don't want to say them. And you just kind of do a U-turn with your cart. You go out in the parking lot and you're putting your groceries in your car and you're like, oh, that's who that was. That's your intuition. That feeling right there.
Yeah. And we all have it. And there are endless stories about don't get on that plane. Don't, don't marry this person. You know, you're walking down the aisle at the church. And I've talked to women and men who've said, I just knew I shouldn't do it, but I didn't have the guts to back out. You know, like Princess Diana said, the initials were on the tea towels already in that famous interview about Charles and Camilla and how she knew she had no business marrying him, but she did it anyways because she didn't think she could back out of it. And we all come in with that internal GPS system. And it doesn't mean that what we're facing is bad or wrong. It just means, what I take it to mean is, stop and evaluate.
Absolutely.
This is your alarm going, hey, wait a minute, pause, check this out. Is this based in a limiting belief? Like, you're not supposed to go to college. You're supposed to just get married and have babies and have dinner ready when your husband gets home, or what? And that internal GPS system called intuition will never fail us, ever.
Yeah.
We always know if we go against what our gut tells us, we regret it.
Absolutely.
In any situation. Yeah.
And most women won't, because again, it's change. If hey, my gut's saying, I know he's cheating on me. I know he's cheating, because I used to get that a lot. And I'm like, if you're asking me, you're asking me for a reason. You know this. Go to your gut, you know? I never made my readings about, I'm going to tell you what to do. I'm going to solve, because I don't feel like that's what a reading should ever be. And nobody has your answers. I would lead them and intuitively lead them to a space inside of themselves where they already know what their answers are. I would tell people, my clients, I want to get you to a place where you don't need me. I want you to trust yourself. I have a question for you. How did you get into medical intuitive work?
I was in the medical supply business, hospital supply business, not on the drug side, on the equipment and the disposable side, primarily disposables. And so I was always interested in helping people heal. Worked, and actually, interestingly enough, I worked in a hospital in the public relations department for the 2 summers before I graduated from college, between my sophomore and junior and senior year. So I knew I wanted something to do with medical, but I didn't know what it was. I knew I wanted to sell hospital supplies. So I did that. And then when I first heard about medical intuition, you mentioned Carolyn Mace, Anatomy of the Spirit. A girlfriend gave me that book, and she called herself a medical intuitive. And I thought, this is 30 years ago. And I thought, what the heck is that? I'd never heard that term. And back then, we didn't have the internet yet. So I went to a bookstore, a Barnes & Noble, and I read her book. I wanted to know more. I went to Barnes & Noble, found Hands of Light by Barbara Brennan, who was a former NASA physicist who parlayed very complex quantum physics principles into understandable English to facilitate energy healing. And I thought, ooh, I want to learn more about that. So I called her school, which was on Long Island at the time in New York. And I said, you guys get anybody teaching this stuff near me? And lo and behold, they did. And I studied with this woman for, 6 years formally. And we're still in touch. I talk to her monthly. She's my mentor. Still, she's in her 80s now, and she's just lovely and so wise. And so now I teach people around the world how to do what I do. And I believe all my background in surgery, in helping to come up with new inventions, test prototypes, train doctors, being there while reps are being trained, things like that, gives me a frame of reference for the energy healings that I see occur. And it's fascinating. For an information suck like you and me, I get to see new stuff pretty much every day. I saw something earlier and was working with a graduate of my class who's also a physician, a retired physician, and we were doing a healing. She had sprained her ankle. She'd torn some ligaments and stuff. And I was watching this healing that I hadn't seen before, and I said, oh, this is so cool. And I was describing it to her, and I said, it's because you and I are working together and our vibe is so high. But I'll see new healings come in for the first time, and then they're part of my repertoire. I'll see it from there on. So it's like keep getting to experience, I don't know if they're higher levels, they're just different depending on what the symptoms are. So it's fascinating. And then once you connect with spirit, you know this, you can do it all. I mean, I don't understand why the woo-woo business is segregated. Why is it siloed? Connect with spirit, you can talk to dead people, you can talk to dead pets, you can talk to live people, live pets, you can do healings, you can do past life stuff, you can talk to spirit guides and angels and whatever.
It's energy.
I don't understand why it's siloed. Exactly.
Energy.
But you know, in our industry, we've got the pet psychics, and then you got the, you know, the mediums, and then you got the healers, and it's kind of like the medical business. You got the cardiologist and the proctologist and the neurologist and the gynecologist, and you know, it's all the body. It's all the same thing, and that's how I feel the energy thing works, which makes me different too, like you, because one of my girlfriends is a professor emeritus, and she started the entrepreneur program at Southern Cal. And when I was first doing this, she said, well, you got to pick a niche. I said, why? She goes, because, you know, you can't be that broad. I said, watch me. And so like you, it's like, well, why wouldn't I do it that way? Just because somebody thinks I shouldn't. Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever.
I hope you don't mind, but I have one more question for you because I'm so fascinated. I'm curious, who was 8-year-old Julie?
In what way?
Just, what I do don't you know, mean? Who were you at 8 years old?
Curious, number two in the birth order, peacemaker, creative, I would say, yeah. You know, march to the beat of a different drummer.
And it's interesting because I feel like who we become, there's evidence, there's remnants of it woven throughout our whole life. So even though you didn't intellectually know that you were going to be maybe an outlier or, you know, kind of be different, you were wired that way, even at 8 years old. You were creative. You were, you know, I was doing things at 8 years old that, you know, I had imaginary friends, you know, and then people would say, well, she's traumatized. Well, I didn't think so, right? I was being very creative. I was feeding my baby dolls mud pies. I mean, I was finding ways to do things, building forts, digging a swimming pool in my grandmother's acreage and putting garbage bags in it for liners because I was going to make a pool. Just doing these things. And I think if we look back, and that's the beauty, when we use hindsight in that way, and we can connect the dots as to who 8-year-old Julie was, who 8-year-old V was. And it's like, wow, there's the evolution of my soul right in front of me. It's just,
well,
wrong.
A story just came into my head after you asked me that question. And that is, you know, 8 years old, you're in second grade. I remember coming home from school with a math test that I hadn't done poorly on. And my parents were talking to me about it. And I said to them when I was 8, I can remember this clear as day, I said, I just need to know how to do the basics because I'm going to hire somebody that knows how to do advanced math. I don't need to know that. I need to know how to do the basics. And they looked at me like, have you landed from Mars? And you know what? I've done that for my whole life. Yeah. I mean, I can read a balance sheet. I understand. I don't need to know that advanced stuff. I need to know the basics. I need to know what the bottom line is. I need to know all that. But I hire people that are really good at doing algorithms and all that advanced math stuff. I didn't need to know it. So there's your answer.
I mean, there's the
point, need to know advanced
right?
math.
Yeah. So one of the exercises I do with my clients is, and it's not morbid, it might sound it, I have them write their eulogy for their business.
Yeah.
So where do you want your business to be in 50 years or whatever? And she has this beautiful dream that comes out on paper. And it's like, okay, here's our steps, you know? So I help build that also.
You're all about creating laughter and joy. Why?
Because, again, referring back to who I was and how I was, laughter saved my life. And if I was the class clown, both of my boys were the class clowns. They're very academically, they're brilliant. They're in medicine and sales, and they're brilliant boys, but we're really funny. And they got funny because I was funny, I think, but I got funny. Well, I guess my father was funny, but it was survival for me. You know, when you grow up, and we were lower middle class, right? There wasn't a lot, and we didn't have the fancy, and, you know, we didn't call it bullying back in the 70s, but yeah, I was bullied. And I always thought, if I can get them over here, if I can get them close to me, and laughter can be that, they're not going to make fun of me. They're going to want to be with me. And as a result, I didn't fit with any clique in high school. I could sit at the jock table as easily as the, you know, the nerd table or the band or whatever you want to call it. And it just, because I was funny. And funny is what saved my life. And now if we think about energy, I tell my clients, because I have my membership, we do improv and we do laughter yoga. Laughter raises the vibration, which creates a stronger connection.
So, yeah. I always say spirit doesn't communicate on the I feel crappy channels because the vibration's too low.
Absolutely.
And it's true. It's true. And when we feel badly, we're in fear, whether it's anger, jealousy, boredom, grief, actual fear, it's all fear. When we're in fear, we're in fight or flight. So that clarity goes by the wayside because the blood's drained from the brain and going to the extremities and the heart to run away from that appointment that you're running late to.
Absolutely.
That is being perceived the same as your saber-toothed tiger that you referenced earlier.
We can't regulate, right? Because it's like, oh my God, it's a text message. Yeah, but you don't have to go out and forage and, you know, for your food, but we need to slow down.
So how did your intuitive and psychic abilities develop?
In 1987, I was pregnant with my second son. My beloved grandfather passed away. And I was beyond consolable. I was hysterical. And I was wide awake. I was sitting on my sofa pregnant. And it was the middle of the night. And he came to me. I saw him at the foot of my sofa. And I'd seen him as I'd never seen him because he was 68 when he passed, very young. But he had this navy or tan army uniform on, and I'd never seen him in that. Well, he served in World War I. And he looked at me, and I knew it was him. I could see him. And he said to me, "I'm okay. You need to take care of that little boy inside of you." I didn't know I was having a boy, you know? And then a couple months later, I went on to have my second son. As I was helping my grandmother pack things up, I came across the exact picture of how he looked standing in front of me. And so that was my first experience with seeing dead people.
Goosebumps on that story.
Pretty cool. And then, you know, with the angelic intervention, it just seemed to ramp. It's like I got a fuse, like I got a charge. Like, you know how like in the movies you see lightning bolt comes out? I think it was phenomenal with John Travolta. He got hit by lightning and he's already knew something. Well, I think my angelic intervention just like turned things on because all of a sudden I would start spewing out stuff about people. We would be out to dinner and the waitress would come over to me and I have this way, like I'm the Pied Piper for some reason. Everybody's drawn to me and they always want to talk to me. And I would start to tell her stuff about herself. My husband would be like, he'd be kicking me under the table. Like, what are you doing? And I said, oh, no, it's just, you know, coming out. It was appropriate. And I just started to know this stuff. And I thought, what am I going to do with this? Like, what, you know, I didn't know. And so I did the most normal thing you do. I went to the Life Coaching Academy. I became a life coach. I found a container to put it in. And so I built a business being known as a life coach and then, you know, kind of added the the intuition into it. And then I got found and it was like, oh, she's out of the closet. So, but I wish it was some remarkable story that I had the, you know, the grandmother and we traveled as gypsies, but no, I don't have to do that.
Well, I had family and friends saying, why are you studying this stuff? What are you going to do with it? I said, I don't know. Well, why are you even learning it? Why do you care about it? I don't know. I'm just being led to do it. And here I am 30 years later doing this full time and having a ball doing it. Would you be willing to share what was the catalyst, or was it a series of events that led you to want to take your life? Was it a hormonal thing, do you think? Was it a divorce, or what was going on?
Well, I was I'll say it PG like, because I don't know the rules here, but I was a really crappy person. I had made some decisions in my life that hurt a lot of people. I had an extramarital affair. Mind you, men do that, and I had had it done to me, and that's okay because men are supposed to do that. And that was the whole mentality. But when I did it, based on the coldness at home and, you know, not knowing who I was, I hurt a lot of people. I felt, you know, the stigma of a woman doing it. And I just couldn't live with myself. I was 28 years old. I was very young. I married very young. So I was 28, 29 years old. And I just didn't see a way out. How could I cope with this? How would I go on and live? I wasn't good enough to live. And that's why when they said to me, we've got you, you're not going anywhere, you know, I finally felt for the first time in my life that I mattered. Wow. I really felt like I mattered, and it opened something. And that's like with the one word that I talk about, the four words. My word is recognition. And you know, what I've come to understand from spirit, it isn't, it's the word for sure, but there's an I statement underneath it, because we're all looking for something, right? And yes, recognition, but underneath that, I need to know I matter. So I can go out and build this business and take this pivot, and I can have everybody saying, oh, come here, do this, be this. But I have to stop and say, do I matter in this equation? Does what I want matter? Does what spirit wants, what my soul wants? That's the question I ask. And it's been very powerful for me this last year.
Thank you for sharing that.
You're very welcome.
What a wonderful story. What are the four words again?
Love, security, status, recognition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the e-journal, it's not for the faint of heart. They're very intense, deep questions. I tell you, take 2 days on each question, because you just can't breeze through it. It should take you about 5 months to finish the journal. And that's the companion piece when women work with me. We work through that.
I'm interested about the status one. What do women say about that, on the status thing? Like, they're, is it a socioeconomic status thing? I'm staying in this marriage because of what I have, what my,
that's it,
you know, what my financial situation, yep, is. And if I left, my life would be very different, kind of a thing.
Yep, that's exactly it. Or what they came from, you know, are they in the mentality of that? Are they trying to break free from it? What do they, you know, what do they tell themselves about status? And, you know, every time I do this exercise with women, you don't know what word's going to hit you. And, you know, and then eventually you work through all four of these words, because the power of words also saved my life. I would collect quotes when I was coming up. Like, I knew the meaning, I knew that words mattered. And so when I would read a quote, you know, and just hear, you know, the specific vibration around the energy of the quote, you know, it would change everything. And I'd be like, oh my God, what if I lived those words? You know, what if I was, be the change you want to see? Like, that's a very famous quote and we all know it, right? But what if, I brought those words to life. Imagine, what if? So,
well, and the word status, I think, has a negative connotation to it a lot of the time. And do you find that there are women who get to the place where it's a positive? It's not a positive just because they feel more secure, but it's a positive because it's something that they've wanted and they've achieved. I mean, what's the positive of that word? I understand the positive of all the other ones, but the status one has piqued my curiosity.
Yeah. So the status, you know, when we look at it, you know, and we kind of get a lay of the land, a benchmark where she resonates with status, you know, her status, I've had women make status be what they contribute in the world. Like, she went in to do this business because it brought her millions of dollars, and that was great. And her status was, right? But there was still something that felt off about status. So when we look at status from the perspective I take you through, it's what is the status of your soul? What is the status of your personality and the alignment of your personality with your soul? Because you can take your personality all the way to a billionaire, right? And you can say, here's my status at a billionaire. But now when you're lining your soul with that personality, what has to happen for there to be an alignment up here? You have to deal with the energy. And what comes up about status is unique to every woman. No two conversations I have are ever the same, ever. So,
great question. I bet it's fascinating. Yeah. You say you're 35 years clean from drama and chaos. What's that mean?
You know, when I worked in the dental office in the late 80s, early 90s, mid-90s, I went into my boss's office and I said, you know, I managed 10 women in the office. And I said, you know, these women, they're dramatic. And I'm going on and on. And I just sat there and I thought, he's going to split it. And he looks at me and he said, you're the one bringing the drama. Oh, I was livid when he called me dramatic. I mean, it stung to my core. So I went home and I thought, it's funny because he went and him and his wife went to New Orleans and he brought all the girls back little voodoo dolls. Well, I had this voodoo doll home at the time and I thought, you know what? I went home and it was like, you know, how dare you call me dramatic? And I realized, you attract what you are. On some level, I was being dramatic. So I had to look at that, right? Here's the evolution of self. I had to look at the dramatic part of me. You know, who is she? What is she doing? And you may not come in my life if you're bringing drama. You may not. And I'm not going to play and be part of your chaos. My family, they'll call me up. I'll listen because they're all still a little dramatic. And I'll say, you're not expecting anything other than I'm just going to be holding dead space on the other side, right? Because I'm not going to cut up Aunt Sally and, you know, Uncle Bobby, because I just don't. So, yeah, I'm proud of that. That was a feat in and of itself right there.
How does one navigate that when they've got somebody who's a family member that's being a drama queen or king, and perhaps it has to do with addiction or marriage stuff or whatever, but there's just always some drama going on. How do you navigate that when you decide you don't want to be around it? You don't want to deal with it, but this is a close family member.
Yeah. There's something that happens, something that takes over when you start living from your heart and you start conversations from the heart. And it's a whole, you know, energy. It's a whole different, your inflection's different, your direction of where you'll take the conversation. Everything's just different when you speak from your heart. So my family knows and have known for some time. I don't have a filter, but it is never about hurting anyone. And so I'm putting this forward and I'm saying what's on my heart in a loving way of what's good for me, you don't have to do anything with it. And I'm very clear about that. But it was a process like everything else, right? Because at first I was the B-I-T-C-H, like, oh my God, who does she think she is? She's better than all of us. And I just, it wasn't that at all. I was, you know, it's the B word, boundaries. And I also teach that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, good. One last question. Why do you think we incarnate?
Oh,
I think we incarnate because we have that infamous to-do list. So I am a firm believer that the soul is all about sucking up the experiences, right? Knowing itself from different lenses, different perspectives, right? And so as we come in and I become this person and my soul knows itself through this lens and it's excited to go back. And I liken it to, you know, we go back and we get in the line and we go to the council and they say, okay, this, this, and this, now go over here. And, you know, some might call it purgatory or whatever you want to call it. Hang out a little bit, review your work. What do you need now? And then we get to come back again. And I know evidence of this for me is deja vu. Like, you know, been there, done that, right? So, all right, and I've been there, done that, but I can't put my finger on it. But what did I do about it when I was there? Like, that's the kind of questions I ask. And then I go, I get transported back to maybe a past life or a past experience. So I think we come in ultimately. The ultimate is if we can, and I don't believe this is achievable 100%, we come in to align the personality with the soul. So that we can live. And I don't think it's linear. I'm just doing this for personality and soul because I don't think anything about the soul's journey is linear at all. But if we can align the soul and the personality, I think we have a shot at probably healing the world if we would all just walk around in that alignment.
Interesting. What a fascinating conversation. I could talk to you for another couple of hours, but, you know, we all got lives to lead, right? How can people learn more about you and your work?
Thank you. VeronicaDrake.com is my website. I'm all over the place. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm on Instagram. Just my name. I'm Googleable. Very Googleable. So Veronica Drake.
Veronica Drake. Thank you for taking the time to share your wisdom and some of your life's journey with us. And I appreciate you parlaying that into tools that can help women our age and younger and older. And every woman's going to be a middle-aged woman at some point.
Isn't that true?
I think your teachings and your wisdom will help future generations as well. Everybody, that's it for today. Thanks so much for joining us. Sending you lots of love from Sweet Home, Alabama. Mwah! And from Pennsylvania, too, where V is. We'll see you next time. Bye, everybody.
Thanks for joining us. Be sure to follow Julie on Instagram and YouTube at Ask Julie Ryan and like her on Facebook at Ask Julie Ryan. To schedule an appointment or submit a question, please visit AskJulieRyan.com.
This show is for informational purposes only. It is not intended to be medical, psychological, financial, or legal advice. Please contact a licensed professional. The Ask Julie Ryan Show, Julie Ryan, and all parties involved in producing, recording, and distributing it assume no responsibility for listeners' actions based on any information heard on this or any Ask Julie Ryan shows or podcasts.